show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Good evening for those of you for whom this is evening. Good afternoon. Good morning. Good night. Good night. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. It is the beginning of a new week. It is a weird week for me. This is the only, just a reminder, this is the only week that I'll be on air, or the only day this week that I'll be on air, because Ferg, me, and a whole bunch of folks from Coal River Mountain Watch are headed off down Kentucky way for some meeting, required meetings and teachings and learnings, and yeah, you get the idea. So let's make the best of it. It is Moran Monday, by the way. How could we possibly forget? The Moran certainly won't let us. But I'll be back. Well, we've got it, and yeah, let's do this while it's on while it's at the sort of tip of my brain. A week from this evening, we will be having an American history seminar chat with Dr. Bill and Keith Lilly, Dr. Bill O'Brien and Keith Lilly from the campus of Concord University, Beckley, and so that'll be going on a week from tonight, and then next week's broadcast schedule is. Gosh, I hope it's something we can refer to as normal. And after that, the following week gets a little bit weird again because it's on the road to Washington. We'll get through all of this. We really will get through all of this. But we've got this evening to get through, and I think we will get through in good order. With any luck at all, we will be talking long about, 27 minutes from now. We'll be talking with Margaret Flowers. Margaret Flowers, you may have heard on the Molloy program. I'll be talking to her here about what's going to be going on in Washington, D.C. beginning on the 6th of October. The October 2011 movement. That's October2011.org. And I plan to be there for that. So it should be a good conversation coming your way in about 27 minutes, like I said. Either she's going to dial in or we're going to dial her. One way or the other, we'll get her on the air. So we've got that going for us, which is good. Some other things, some here and there, some this and that, a couple of emails. Apparently, and nobody consulted me, apparently September is Gripe at Bob Month here at the Horn. All griping is free. I got up Saturday morning, or was it Sunday? Let me see. Yeah, it was Saturday morning. No, it was Sunday morning. Got up Sunday morning to find this in the inbox from a longtime listener. Hey, Bob. And he wants you all to know that it's little letters, B-O-B, small b, small o, small b. Notice the small caps, Jeb says. Here's an idea. Instead of moaning and bitching about donations falling off while you're gone, how about getting the members of your family to fill in? Or maybe your neighbor. Or maybe one of your listeners. Or maybe me. I work cheap, free. The world does not stop because you're not on the radio. Oh, this talking thing is so difficult, laborious, and difficult. I guess if I practiced in front of a mirror for another 10 years, I might be ready. I listen because I like what you say. My family and coworkers are all right-wingers. What's the matter with you? Get over yourself. Like I said, and mercifully, there's only 11 days left in the month. September is Bitch It Bob month here at the Horn. Well, let's see. The kids don't know how. My lovely wife will be busy taking care of them. Many of my neighbors are right-wingers, too. And frankly, I don't have any way of transporting all this stuff to somebody else and setting it up and then turning it around and to bring it back. And no, it doesn't work that way. But I have, over the course of the last 48 hours, gotten over myself. That does not, however, change the fact that donations to the program will fall off dramatically while I'm gone running reruns, because, you know, who wants to listen to a rerun, right? And that is where, thank heaven, that is where Paul from Portland comes in. With an email I received just a little bit ago called the While Bob's Away Challenge. Dear Bob, catching up on podcasts from last week. I heard that you're on the air today and gone the rest of the week. In an attempt to bolster contributions while you're gone, I would like to put forth a challenge. I know that it is hard for people to contribute. I myself haven't contributed since July of last year to help with the septic system. I don't have any real excuse, just an explanation. I'm on student loans now, and the money is only to be used for books, tuition, rent, food, travel, car repair, etc. I'm paranoid about the fact that my loans could be canceled by some Bush administration holdover who would think it fun to pull the rug out from under me for contributing to a liberal show. However, I've been living tight over the summer, and loans are coming in soon. I find myself with leftover money. It is my money, not a loan that I can give. So I'd like to put forth this challenge. I have $50, and it will be the only money I can give Bob until I graduate with my master's in biochemistry this June. I'm looking forward to getting the graduation notice. You know, it's inspiring to see all of this as it happens. You know, it was just a couple of months ago that we got to start referring to our buddy, Horn archaeology consultant John, as Dr. John. And hearing from Paul in June of next year that he's gotten his master's will be good news. Sandra celebrated her graduation not too awfully long back, and she's working on a graduate degree now. It's inspiring. Anyway, back to what Paul said. So I'd like to put forth this challenge. I have $50, and it will be the only money I can give Bob until I graduate with my master's in biochemistry this June. I'd like to make it count. So from now until the end of this month, I will match every dollar contributed with 50 cents of my own up to $50 of my own money. I know that most challenges are dollar for dollar, but come on, I'm broke, and I'd like to make my money go further. So if $100 is raised for the challenge, I will give 50 for a total of $150. I don't care how you contribute, PayPal, snail mail, or finding Bob on the street during his trip and putting cash in his hand. Yeah, I'm not going to be on the corner with a cup and a pencil. I just won't. We're not quite down to that yet. Oh, get over yourself, Bob. But I would like to call on members of the Horn family that are usually not regular contributors, Paul says. I know it's hard to contribute due to the economy or a student loan situation like myself, but please contribute. Nothing would make me happier if this challenge was made by 100 $1 contributions from people who are not regular contributors. However, if you're a regular contributor, please feel free to participate. Well, I'll leave it to Bob to name the challenge and to tell people how to let him know that it is for my challenge. Let's all pool together and let Bob not worry about contributions drying up while he's gone this week. Enjoy your time this week, Bob. Walking the walk. Paul from Portland. Well, that certainly seems an appropriate name. The Paul from Portland Challenge. And he's going 50 cents for every buck. So we need $100 to get to Paul's challenge. And that makes for $150. So let's see how that happens during my absence and for the remainder of the month of September. Although it would be awfully nice just to, well, folks generally respond well to these challenges because they see that other people are doing their part, and it I think it helps to build a sense of camaraderie, if you know what I mean. So let's see how this will all work out. And you can just put in the notation. You know, if you go to PayPal, they offer you an opportunity to make a little note. Just put Paul from Portland challenge. Although, truth be told, as far as PayPal is concerned, I don't think they'll accept anything less than $5. Snail mail is different. And the snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. It's right there, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, stands for Personal Mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Anyway is fine by me. And a reminder, and just to update you, it happened after we were off air on Saturday. After John's, Dr. John's challenge was met, Susan also issued her own. And that was met over the weekend with a final contribution that came in Saturday or Sunday and pushed us over. So thank you very, very kindly for that. This from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, you could stand on a corner with a sign that says, "We'll pontificate for contributions." I don't have the funny hat for pontificating, Ron. Nor, apparently, do I fill the requirement that I be a former member of the Hitler Youth and anti-aircraft gunner who fired on American and other Allied aircraft. So, no pontificating for me. Pontificate. Ron's feeling frisky this evening. But I'm over myself. I'm completely over myself. Now, where to go this evening? Well, it is Moran Monday. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and, well, who better than to start with, you know, and I had the audio, and somewhere along the way, the machine reset itself, and now God only knows. But I did have the audio. But I don't now. So we don't have to listen to his creaky, crinkly, wrinkly old, nasty old, gooey voice. We can just read the quote. It's Moran Monday. And while there are a lot of Morans out there, Godzilla from Wasilla comes to mind. Certainly, Michelle Bachmann is a Moran. Rick Perry is a moron who can't even write his own stuff, if you have seen that story. And weird that this is coming from a fellow conservative. The blogger Jennifer Rubin over at the Washington Post has said that Rick Perry did not write a pro-Israel op-ed that was published in the Wall Street Journal, as well as in the Jerusalem Post. So I guess, is that technically plagiarism? Taking someone else's work for your own when the work that's not your own was written for you? That seems a shade of difference, but probably close enough for government work, as it were. This op-ed, which was... it didn't show up in brown crayon on butcher paper, so that probably was the first dead giveaway that Rick Perry had not written this piece. the piece contains what is referred to by Ms. Rubin as a cherry-picked quote. This from the opening paragraph of the Rick Perry op-ed for the Wall Street Journal and the Jerusalem Post. Historian T.R. Fehrenbach once observed that my home state of Texas and Israel share the experience of, quote, civilized men and women thrown into new and harsh conditions, beset by enemies, unquote. Yeah, that's right. Texas is just like Israel. Because after all, Israel, like Texas, was formed by people who went into a land that was not their own so that they could hold slaves. Oh, wait. If you buy the Exodus myth, the Hebrews were slaves leaving Egypt and went into somebody else's land. Well, either way you slice it, they were beset by enemies, and that makes them just alike. And the whole point of the thing was to attack Barack Obama, naturally. It was to attack Barack Obama for things that aren't fully, well, maybe they're comprehensible inside the tiny empty space where brains and humans sit that is occupied by vacuum in the skull, inside the skull of Rick Perry. His idea being that Barack Obama is somehow not pro-Israel enough. Now, as you may recall, on Friday, I believe it was, Sandra brought up the fact that there's a bit of a Donnybrook stewing in the UN Security Council. Because coming up this week, Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority is going to seek full membership in the UN. Now, the way the votes are counted, it has to have 9 yeas and 0 vetoes. Guess who's going to throw the veto? Yeah, the Obama administration that Rick Perry says isn't pro-Israel enough. Now, as Sandra pointed out, this is going to be a monumental screw-up, any way you slice it. Let's see. 4 in favor of the Palestinian bid: China, India, Lebanon, Russia, South Africa. Undecided: Bosnia and Herzegovina, Brazil, Colombia, France, Gabon, Nigeria, Portugal, United Kingdom. The UK said to be still refusing to clarify exactly how it will vote when Palestinians bid for full membership. Also noting the fact that a vast majority of the British public support Palestinian statehood. And then in that teensy-tiny list opposed to the bid, Germany. They are fully committed to voting against the full membership for Palestine. And then us. We believe the move would be counterproductive and derail negotiations with Israel. And while not a majority, a plurality of Americans support Palestinian statehood, I think it's probably safe to say that the vast majority of listeners here to the Horn family do. But the whole point is Rick Perry, who said that Obama just, well, he doesn't support Israel enough. Now, mind you, Barack Obama has never stopped the river of money that flows to Israel from you and me. And I don't mean any little old miserable ass dries up in Summertime Creek either. I mean, this is a river of money. Nope. Still going strong. And Israel doesn't want Palestinian recognition in the UN, so what Israel wants the United States to do, Israel gets. Because as Americans, we're no longer allowed to have our own independent foreign policy where Israel is concerned. Frustrating, yes. But somehow, using his brown crayon and some butcher paper, and words that have more than one syllable, Rick Perry managed to write, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, an op-ed that was published in the Jerusalem Post and the Wall Street Journal, a pair of pretty much right-wing rags. Jennifer Rubin said, and I quote, "Perry almost certainly didn't write it. We know that." Oh, this is going to sting. "We know that because his own foreign policy views are rudimentary. A ghostwritten piece so far above his current abilities highlights the concern." Now, she went on and she said, now, of course, it's understandable. Most politicians have these things written for them. And that's true. I mean, that's what all the hacks and flacks are for. And no offense, but when, you know, your third grade class gets its official signed portrait of Barack Obama to hang on the wall, because all 30 kids or whatever wrote off for it, odds are that was done by somebody else. Or a machine signer. Whatever. It's understood. But the point that Jennifer Rubin was trying to make was that, she said, quote, "until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors," oh man, this stings. I mean, this is like alcohol on a skint knee. "Until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors should forego the pretense of sophistication." Man, the pretense of sophistication. I'd suggest that Jennifer Rubin not go anywhere near Texas for a while. Because, I don't know, the Texas Rangers will, and I don't mean the baseball club, I mean the law enforcement unit, will pick her up. And the next thing you know, we'll all be standing around saying, please don't execute Jennifer Rubin. I mean, it's dangerous down there. Sheesh. Because you understand that last sentence is kind of Washington speak for he's a moron. Because that's what that means. "Until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors should forego the pretense of sophistication." No, that's fancy Washington speak for, man, is this guy dumb. And not just a little bit, a whole lot dumb. Yeah, in other words, he can't tell the difference between Palestine, Texas, and, Palestine. Because I'm pretty sure there's a Palestine, Texas.
That's just one of those things.
Yeah, right.
But nevertheless, the thing went out there and is something less than... Right. It does not... you read it and you just don't say, oh, well, look, sure, he wrote this. It doesn't compute. Now, here's the fun part. Let's see. Comment from the Jerusalem Post. Comment. The Palestinians' illegitimate UN gambit. By Rick Perry. The historic friendship between the United States and Israel stretches from the founding of the Jewish state in 1948 to the present day. Our nations have developed vital economic and security relationships in an alliance based on shared democratic principles, deep cultural ties, and common strategic interests. Historian T.R. Fehrenbach once observed that my home state of Texas and Israel share the experience of civilized men and women thrown into new and harsh conditions beset by enemies. That still makes my head hurt. Surrounded by unfriendly neighbors and terror organizations that aim to destroy it, life has never been easy for Israel. Today, the challenges are mounting. The Jewish state faces growing hostility from Turkey. Its three-decade-old peace with Egypt hangs by a thread. Iran pursues nuclear weapons supply its leaders vow to use to annihilate Israel. Terrorist attacks on Israeli civilians from Hezbollah and Hamas continue. Blah, 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 blah. So maybe in the next T-bait or whatever, Michelle Bachmann can sort of maybe get some of her cred back by asking him if he really, really honestly and for true wrote that op-ed. The fun part, as I mentioned, Rick Perry's advisors on foreign policy, reported foreign policy contacts, Don Rumsfeld and Douglas Feith. I'm going to have to go back and go over the op-ed with a fine-tooth comb and see if I see any references to known gnomes and unknown gnomes. Then we'll know it was Rumsfeld. A war criminal in his own right. So, that's where we find ourselves starting, and it's time for me to get Margaret Flowers on the phone. It's just going to be a short conversation. And we will go from there. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Well, I took a walk around the world to ease my troubled mind. I left my body lying somewhere in the sands of time. But I watched the world go to the dark side of the moon. I feel there's nothing I can do.
27 and a half minutes before the hour, and I don't want to waste a single second getting to the phones. Margaret Flowers is with us, Dr. Margaret Flowers, an organizer for the October 2011 event coming up in Washington, D.C. October2011.org is the website. Dr. Flowers, thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you for having me on tonight, Bob.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I'm very excited about what you all have been working toward in Washington here. Well, just a couple of weeks away, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think we have about 17 days.
I have a feeling it probably feels like you could use another month or two, but these things never work out quite that way. What kind of plans are underway?
Well, we're very excited about the October 2011, the October 6th action in Washington, D.C. in Freedom Plaza. We have thousands of people that have already signed up. People are coming from across the country to join us to stay in Freedom Plaza. And we call this action Stop the Machine, Create a New World. The Stop the Machine is the corporatism, the corporate powers that control our political process and our corporate media message, and then militarism, which causes us to have such a huge presence around the world, stretching our resources thin so that we can't meet our needs here at home. So we will be engaging in resistance focused on that, but we're also calling it Create a New World because we've identified 15 core crises in this country, things like the need for health care, education, jobs, housing, cleaning up the environment. And we're going to be working on solutions because we know that there are evidence-based solutions to each of these crises. And we're going to create a document of specifically where we want to go in this country, what we want to see done.
Well, that's one of the things that strikes me as most dynamic about this is the fact that it is not a single-issue occupation or a single-issue rally, protest, demonstration, whatever word we choose. You're looking at environmental issues. You're looking at political, monetary issues. You're looking at the labor workers' rights issues. What kind of a coalition have you pulled together for all of this?
Well, it's fantastic because people from all of these different issues have come together. Organizations that advocate for these different issues have endorsed this action, and people who advocate for the different ones, because it seems like we were all starting to come to the same awareness at the same time, is that each of our issues, when we try to advocate for a single issue, we don't have the strength or the numbers of people to really shift the power away from this corporate domination of our political process. And so we end up with, if we get anything passed legislatively, it's so weakened that it's practically ineffective and always seems to benefit the industries that profit. So so many of us were talking about it, you know, we need something more, something better. And all of these issues are connected, particularly for me with health. Our health really does depend on having education, a clean environment, you know, adequate food and water. So they're all connected, and the consciousness really seems to be that the time has come to join together in solidarity and really create some strength in numbers to change things.
Well, the other thing that is remarkable about this is that it is, as far as I can tell, open-ended. And I think that's so very important, Dr. Flowers, simply because If the power people in Washington know that, yeah, okay, so a million people are going to show up on Saturday, they're going to be home by Monday, then they really don't have to listen to us anymore at all, do they?
Right, and they don't. Frequently they leave town. So these Saturday rallies that we've been having for so many years where we bring hundreds of thousands of people to the city are completely ignored. They don't end up having an impact on the policy that's put forth. And so that was something that we also were tired of doing. We really don't have time anymore. The way things are going in this country with the economy, with the environment, healthcare, education, we really can't just wait for somebody else to do this for us or do these symbolic actions hoping they'll have some difference. What a big part of this is becoming less compromising, that we need to say, you know what, this is what we need to meet our human needs, and we're staying until we see some change in that direction. It's also looking not to leaders to do it for us, but empowering ourselves to find ways to put pressure on the system, to undermine the system that we have, so that we can start shifting towards meeting our human needs.
Does this include suggestions for actual concrete policy changes as well?
Well, that's what we'll be coming up with during the occupation. Part of what will be done in the plaza is meeting. We're dividing up into 15 different committees, one for each of the core issues that we've identified. And we want these committees to be, and they are becoming, composed of people who are affected by the issue and people who are doing the advocacy work on the issue, because this is not what we see in Congress. In Congress, it's the industries that profit off of it that decide the policy. But the people that are living it and the people that are doing the work, looking at what models work, they're the ones that really have the solutions. And so we will be coming out with a very specific solutions. We'll be holding assemblies each night. If all works out, we'll be able to live stream these assemblies so that people who can't make it to D.C. can still listen in on what solutions are being talked about and why, and participate in this decision making. So at the end, we will have very concrete solutions for each issue.
Well, those streaming issues are something that we have worked very intimately with for the last 5 years, 6 years, well, more than that, here at the Horn. And so, if we can be of any help, helping folks figure out how to go about doing that, we are by all means happy to do so. I'm looking forward to being there on the 6th. I'm looking forward to sitting down with the Environmental Committee and talking with them a little bit about the horrors that we live with here in Appalachia. In terms of it started out as an environmental complaint, but now there's so much data out there that suggests that people are literally dying because of what the coal industry is doing to us here and what the coal industry does in other places, that it really has become a healthcare issue in its own right and a human rights issue. I'm looking forward to being a part of that discussion. Let me ask, this is, of course, the very foundation of all this is nonviolent in its nature. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's a tactic that we decided is the most effective tactic at this point, because we don't have the strength to match, our national security state in terms of at a violent level. So we believe very strongly that we must maintain nonviolence during this action.
And I find that interesting because there was, and I'll be sharing this with the audience later, the right winger, the Andrew Breitbart, called for people to begin gunning down folks like you and me over the weekend, and so I think having a nonviolent determination behind all of this is absolutely critical. Just one question, and it's something that always concerns me, and I've been involved with several of these. Are you prepared for the eventuality of interest trying to infiltrate and change that focus, agent provocateur, if you will?
Absolutely. We've been, many of us that are organizing this have been doing activism for years. Some of the people that have organized this have experienced infiltrators directly. So, yes, we absolutely anticipate that where there will be agent provocateurs, that probably we've been infiltrated already in terms of our group of organizers, which is pretty broad. But we decided that it's, in terms of organizing, that it's best to be out in the open. We didn't want to run into those issues of not being able to trust each other. So we are being open about what we're doing. And we have the veterans are training to be peacekeepers. They've started their training already in August. They'll continue in D.C. So they'll be ready to try to identify and isolate people who instigate violence and turn them over to the police, even if they happen to be police. I was in New York City on Saturday for the beginning of Occupy Wall Street, and as I was leaving, we were getting into our car, we saw two police officers in plain clothes get out of an unmarked car. There was an officer inside with a uniform, and I photographed them walking into the protest area. So, we know that this is just standard procedure.
Well, I had a feeling that would be the sort of answer, because it's obvious how much work has gone into all of this. I know your time is limited, and I don't want to take too much more of it because I know you've got important things to do. But how can, apart, if folks can't get there for the event itself, how else can they help?
Oh, there's lots of ways. This is really just the beginning of what we see as an independent movement, which is what we need in this country. We don't think right now that focusing on electing people is a good place to put our energies. We need to build a strong independent movement with a strong media that's willing to cover it like you. And so people can join the online community through our website, October2011.org. They can participate in the discussions that we have there. They can watch the action, you know, hopefully online and give feedback in terms of what they're hearing there. We certainly need donations. All of this work has been done completely as a volunteer. But we are, you know, having to buy things like porta potties for people that stay in the plaza and some food and medical supplies and those kinds of basics. So donations are helpful, but mostly it's just if people will get engaged, give us their feedback, spread the word to others that this independent movement is building. If you want to plan a solidarity action in your community, that would be fantastic too. You can let us know and we'll post information about it on the website. But this really is about educating ourselves, empowering ourselves, growing our numbers, being willing to do what needs to be done in order to change things around. And we all have the ability to do something.
Wonderful. Dr. Flowers, I thank you for all the work that you've already put into all of this. I look forward to meeting you when we get there to D.C. And if we can be of any further help between now and then, please don't hesitate to reach out to us, okay?
Thank you. We probably will reach out to you on the live streaming issue because, as I said, this is all volunteers, so we'd love to have your expertise. So thank you very much for having me on today, Bob.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Flowers, and a wonderful evening to you.
Same to you.
Bye now.
Freedom Plaza.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. I actually know where Freedom Plaza is. Dr. Margaret Flowers there from October2011.org. It's almost a certainty. Well, it is a certainty. I'll be there. And hopefully a couple of others of my colleagues from here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, will be there as well. October2011.org. Engage in the discussion. Participate. It appears to be a genuine populist movement, and that means, yeah, you've got a voice. You don't have much of one in Washington, D.C., with people who are spend more time with lobbyists than they do with, you know, working folks. If you followed the discussion earlier today following President Obama's remarks, you know that. The right wing spent the weekend and into today running out in defense of millionaires. One of them, a member of Congress, even showed up on MSNBC this morning in a conversation with Chris Jansing to bemoan the fact that when all is said and done and after he's done bought all these groceries and whatnot, that he ain't got. I know, it's hard. It's really, really hard. He's only got $400,000 a year after he's fed his family. I don't know how he gets by. Yeah, his name is John Fleming. He's a Repig Lickin from Louisiana, first elected in 2008. Takes a lot of nerve to whine like that. Well, here, listen.
With all due respect, Congressman, the Wall Street Journal estimated that your businesses, which I believe are Subway sandwich shops and UPS
yes.
stores, very successful,
yes.
brought you last year over $6 million.
Yeah, that's before you pay 500 employees, you pay rent, you pay equipment and food.
Hold on, okay? Before you pay 500 employees at Subway and the UPS store. You got that? 500 Subway and UPS store employees. I am not going to wade off into the Bob in the math swamp stuff. So anybody that wants to whip out the calculator and just sort of rough out 500 people making minimum wage and subtract that from $6 million... And, I don't know, do some research on Representative Fleming. How many Subways? He says 500 employees. That's got to be a lot of Subways. So he's probably got several power bills. He's got several UPS stores. There's probably some electricity involved. But just rough it out, especially the folks who have run businesses, and I know there are a number of you out there. What,
what's that like after he's paid the, because remember, that's $6 million, but that's before you pay 500 minimum wage employees at Subway. Oh, okay, maybe the manager and the assistant manager aren't making minimum wage, but they're not pulling down any $60K a year. Really? Okay. I just got a note from Jude saying that she had lost the audio during the conversation with Dr. Flowers. So let me know if you're losing audio as well. Everything appeared to be okay as we went forward. But I'll let Jude know. No, your heart just breaks for this guy, right? $6 million a year, and he doesn't get to keep every penny of it. Kind of like to know how old his car is, wouldn't you? I mean, I'm not advocating any class warfare, but because you know that's what they say it is. Lindsey Graham Cracker said it was class warfare over the weekend to talk about the rich actually paying. They're paying as much in taxes as a middle class couple earning maybe $40,000 a year, trying to feed a family on that. Yeah. No, that's class warfare. Little Eddie Munster, I mean Paul Ryan said, you know, it's class warfare. It might make for good politics, but it's not good economics. But anyway, let's go back to John Fleming and his sad and sorry plebeian life.
Yeah, that's before you pay 500 employees, you pay rent, you pay equipment and food. The actual net income of that was only a mere fraction of that amount.
So you're saying that if you have to pay more in taxes, you would get rid of some of those employees? These are not as successful.
I would say that since my net income, and again, that's the individual rate that I told you about, the amount that I have to reinvest in my business and feed my family is more like $600,000 of that $6.3 million. And so by the time I feed my family, I have, you know, maybe $400,000 left over to invest in new locations, upgrade my locations, buy more equipment.
You do understand, Congressman, that the average person out there who's making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, when they hear that you only have $400,000 left over, it's not exactly a sympathetic position. You understand that?
Well, again, class warfare has never created a job, and that's people that will not get jobs. This is all about creating jobs, Chris.
Yeah, by God, raise his taxes, and he's going to throw some people out on the street just to show you plebes. Damn proles.
This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes. You know, in this country...
How about that? Did you catch that? Let me roll back to that for just a second.
Get jobs. This is all about creating jobs, Chris. This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes.
This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes. This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes. Coulda fooled me. Because that's all they've been doing. You know, President Obama, whether it was wise or not, proposed a tax break based on continuing the payroll tax cut that went through. I mean, the Republican Party just loves tax cuts, right? Not that one, sorry. It doesn't affect the right people. Attacking people just because of a certain income, well. But beyond that. You know, I just realized I didn't even get to the story I meant to start the program with. We'll find our way around to that in a minute. Beyond that. Note the language. Pay attention to what these people say. Because they really are speaking what's on their minds. Here, in America, in the year 2011, asking this freak to pay the same as a school teacher in terms of a tax rate is an attack on him. Now, I'm sure him being a repiglicking congressman from Louisiana and all, you probably couldn't swing a cat inside his house without scraping up against something with the flag on it. He's probably like that Doonesbury character who has a different flag pin for his pajamas and for his blue suit and his charcoal suit. Probably got a crate of American flag pins. But if you ask him to actually support the country that makes it possible for him to be as wealthy as he is, well, that's an attack on him. Note, as I said, the use of the language. It's an attack. It's warfare! I haven't read any stories about his shrill, shrieking wife being dragged by her hair out into the street and bludgeoned by mobs of angry Social Security recipients. Or even perhaps more likely angry 40-somethings like me who are about to get ripped off because of people like him. And those stories don't exist. For the most part, people won't get outside the comfort of their easy chairs or their sofas. And that's part and parcel of what this event beginning on October 6, 2011 in Freedom Plaza is about. Getting people out of their seats and into the streets. Even if you can't make it to D.C., do something near home. Because odds are, near home needs to be seen and needs to see you, too. Sometimes it's just a matter of standing with a sign, even if you have to stand all by yourself. Because in that moment when you are seemingly alone, you realize that you're not. That you have the moral force of millions of Americans behind you. And what you're actually doing, and perhaps it's hard to recognize because we see so little of it, what you're actually doing is leading. David in Tennessee, who constantly, they're not constant, well, is good to, well, just knows my failings with mathematics. Here, let's put it that way and just deal with it. Be careful with that math on that those 500 employees, Bob. You're onto the minimum wage bit and the zero benefits. Good. Don't forget that none of those minimum wage grinders ever work 40 hours, nor do they ever get OT. Mostly they get 24 to 30 hours. Mostly I think he's doing some sort of a dodge on the numbers of employees. And continuing, and it takes 200 large to feed his family? Somebody eating way high on the hog. I mean, Jesus, now that math I can do. $200,000 divided by 12. He's spending more than $10,000 a month on groceries? That's a lot of hummingbird tongue. That's a lot of lark's vomit. That's a whole bunch of wolf nipple chips. Ocelot's noses. That's not high on the hog. That's the whole hog. And his brother. I mean, even if you're the Osmonds, that's a lot of money every month for groceries. Thanks, everybody. Everybody noting audio is okay for them. I appreciate you letting me know, and Jude says it's back on for her as well. News Ninja Gene, none too happy. These billionaires don't want to pay the same rate as the everyday folks? Ain't that a flat tax? Haven't his class been advocating that? Well, F me! Bastards won't even support their own proposal? F them! Fire up the international! I understand, Gene. I understand. Oh, yeah, this is... this is where the... true colors really, really do begin to shine. He makes the same money, Representative Fleming, as 8 median household incomes. Think Progress noting, and how hard does the congressman work to make that? He told the Wall Street Journal, quote, that he spends very little time on day-to-day management, though he weighs in on broad strategy decisions. I monitor the reports. I'm certainly in communication with the managers. You'll notice also that he said that his financial success is a virtue. His success is a virtue. Oh, Preacher Calvin, I'm so rich. Yes, it's a virtue. It means I'm a good man. I'm wealthy. It means I'm a good man. You know, I'm going to have to get my Kindle in here so I can fire up that quote from Raymond Chandler and just keep it handy about the things that occur. When you really get into the serious money, by the time you get there, you've done some nasty crap to get it. Darlene writing in and noting, the congressman and his family must be having lobster every morning, noon, and night with David Brooks. Oh, Mom, I don't want lobster on my cornflakes again today. Can't we have oysters? Darling, don't be recherché. Oysters are so lower tax bracket. Jeebus. And David in Tennessee's audio has been a little bit dodgy, buffering and blipping. If you have problems, shoot me a note so that I'll know what, because we're sending just fine and dandy from here, which might mean there's a server issue if everybody and their cousin is on the server. But we got a lot of room for listeners on there. So that's where we find ourselves this evening at the end of the first hour of filibustering. And of course your calls are welcome as we finish it. Well, we've got 2 more hours to go. It's Moran Monday on the horn. I never even got to our number one Moran. Maybe after the break. We'll take a little break and come back. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. And I'm happy to announce that we have 3 out of the 7 slots filled. We have $30 in matching toward Paul in Portland's While Bob's Away challenge. So only $70 to go, and I'm sure he'll be tickled to hear it. Thank you very, very kindly. We'll, like I said, take a break and come back. Light 'em up. We've only got this one evening. No, I'm not going to play Bob Seger's We've Got Tonight, okay? You can just forget about that. No, this is for those of us out there who just don't quite make that just getting by $600,000 a year. This is the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Global Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Global Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Global Genius, we got your soap right here.
I got their bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine and a half minutes past the hour here. Getting started on hour two of the program. Very kind, uplifting, and encouraging note coming in from Barry. Subject line, don't go changing. You cannot make me play Billy Joel music on this program. You just can't. Barry says, don't go changing. Please don't get over yourself. It's almost metaphysically impossible. And, I asked for it here, and it happens out there. Got an email in from Jenny. Bob, doing the math. $7.50 an hour times 40 hours equals $15,600. And see, right off the bat, just like David in Tennessee suggested, you know, it probably isn't 40 hours, and they never see overtime. But anyway, working with those 40 hours, $15,600 a year times 500 people... is $7,500,000. He made $6 million, had $600,000 left over. $7,500,000 minus $600,000. The real payout for 500 is $6,900,000. $6,900,000 divided by 500 equals $13,800. That $13,800 divided by 52 equals $265 a week average employee salary. Jenny says, now who's the hero? The man who made millions or the people who work so hard so he can make millions so more people can have a job? What an ass. Yeah. See, that's the thing about making money. It doesn't require... being a politician does not require a lot of brains. It requires ambition that rises to a psychologically diagnosable level. And the same with these millionaires. It didn't require a lot of brains. It required a dogged determination to make millions no matter what and at whatever expense. So, yeah. So it somehow rings hollow. And it rings even more hollow in light of this.
What did you think of this?
Well, Neil, you know, it's really funny because when I looked at that just this morning, and I think they're trying to imply that there's some hypocrisy going on here. But there really isn't any hypocrisy on my side. The hypocrisy is on the other side. I don't want to raise my taxes. I don't raise your taxes. I don't want to raise Warren Buffett's taxes. I don't want to raise anybody's taxes. So I don't see what the hypocrisy is there. But on the other hand, Warren Buffett is saying he thinks he ought to pay more money. Well, you know, there's nothing stopping him from doing that right now. He can pay more money to the federal government if he wants to, but don't ask me and a whole lot of other Americans to contribute to the cause that he believes is worthy. That's really for us to decide.
What that was commentary on Neil Cavuto's show on Radio Rwanda by Representative John Campbell, a Republican from California. Latest valuation of John Campbell of California, Republican. As of 2009, he was worth somewhere up around $37 million. I don't want to raise my taxes. I don't want to raise anybody's taxes. Don't ask me and a whole lot of other Americans to pay. See, that's the thing. If Warren Buffett, and this is not a pay on to Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett has spent a career as a ruthless businessman. He has done plenty of harm throughout his career. You know, Andrew Carnegie wrapped up his life of barony. You know, he was one of those robber barons of the late 19th century. Building libraries, trying to do something good with all the money that he had upwardly transferred from the very poorest into his own pockets. Well, I don't think we have to worry about John Campbell doing that. And he says, well, if Warren Buffett wants to pay more money, that's fine. You just let him go ahead. But the point is, even Warren Buffett can't solve this problem. But if we apply firm and progressive taxation rates, because it is called a progressive income tax after all, or at least that's the way it started, those with more paid more, those with less pay less. It is certainly not the case now, especially with the imposition of sales taxes and gasoline taxes and liquor taxes and tobacco taxes and the so-called sin taxes and fees and right. All those things, sales taxes on groceries, goods, whatever, all of those things hit people who make less harder than they hit people who make more because they represent a greater aggregate portion of income to people who make less. It's simple. But if Warren Buffett said, okay, screw it. You know what? I'm filthy rich. From here on out, I'm giving everything to the IRS. It wouldn't solve the problem. The only way we solve the problem is all of us working together. And down here, amongst us plebs, us proles, we're already doing plenty of the working. In fact, according to people like Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum, Bro Fromix, we're not working hard enough or long enough. Retiring at 67 is way too young for us, says Rick Santorum, if you recall last week's programs. I guess you could say that at least John Campbell was what passes for his class honest. I don't ask me and a whole lot of Americans to pay too. They want all the benefits conferred by being an American, but they do not want for one instant to pay for the privilege. I wonder how he'd like to be the richest man in Somalia or the richest man in Haiti, where he couldn't set foot outside his door without a small army of armed gun thugs to protect his hide from the guy who was next down the rung on the ladder and wanting his lifestyle. Sounds like that's what he wants, isn't it? Doesn't it? But as that book that the Christians are so fond of says, he would be among the first to cry, Lord, Lord. Because he likes that police protection. And he likes that fire protection. As long as it's protecting him. Reverbo with a note. Virtuous? What a put down. Virtue, says Reverbo, is defined thusly. 1. Behavior showing high moral standards. The last definition is interesting. 2. Virtues in traditional Christian angelology, the 7th highest order of the 9-fold celestial hierarchy. The rest of us hard-working American folks, some of whom must have pulled the lever for this lizard, might as well reserve a spot below deck right now, huh? At the end of the day, this schmuck earns a living, cashes his paycheck, just like the rest of us, and what he flushes down the toilet stinks just like ours. Only difference is, he ain't paying his fair share. I didn't realize it was so hard living on per year what I'll be lucky to have for the rest of my life. Reverbo closes saying, it reminds me all too often of your Vonnegut tag at the end of your emails, Bob. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. David in Tennessee. I lived this ugly math. Look, Bob, I saw it said once by a guy that had fired 50 men and women to find 60 that would take his abuse. I've given over 100 people a job, and these people are sending unions after me? They live in a bubble. They live in a bubble of their own imagined persecution. Now, it's not quite the same thing, but let me offer you an excerpt. Don't go turning away. This is not what this is all about. Stand by. Got an email from Ron over the weekend with a link to a Denver Post article. I emailed it on to Sandra because I knew she'd get a... Well, it'd make her scream a little bit. It's a Denver Post article about the Tebow thing. Out that way, you know, there's a little uprising of people wanting third string can't play quarterback to save his immortal soul, little Timmy Jebo to step in and say, you know, I don't know, but put the healing hands of faith behind on the behind of the Denver Broncos center and somehow make it all better and get him to the Super Bowl. Ron writing, he said, I don't know whether you've read the linked article or not. I want to know, is there no place in today's America that we can escape religion industry shills pushing their favorite son or some other crap we can do without? About halfway through the article, the line that caused me to do a facepalm and then give out a primal scream, that line being, it's because he's a Christian that most sports writers won't give him a chance, him being little Timmy Jebo, won't give him a chance. These people are the eternal victims. All sports writers are godless commies that are holding little Timmy Jebo back from his just desserts. I'm not a vindictive man, yet I want Julius Pepper to hit Timmy so hard that he'll see Jesus. Whether it's sports or politics or any other area of our lives, we are inundated with overt in-your-face religiosity, and I, for one, am tired of it. And my point is, it extends beyond that. We're talking about the bubble that, and I guess it's, you know, I don't know, maybe horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner could help out with this a little bit, but there's this sort of, I don't know, spiritually calcified little bubble that exists around these privileged babies that makes them think that, they're persecuted. Little Timmy Jebo is being persecuted for his Lord's namesake, and that's why he's polishing the pine in third string. Doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he's got a goofy-ass throwing motion that would more likely wind up in the hands of the, you know, opposition D-backs than in his own receiver. No, it's because he's being persecuted for being a Christian. And by the same token, these freaks, these multimillionaire freaks in Congress, well, I don't want you to raise my taxes. I want to keep all my money. But I still want the police, and I still want the fire department, and I still want I want all the roads nice and smooth. I don't want anything bouncing underneath my giant Hummer penis extension. Babies. They are babies. Michael, writing in from Sebastopol, says that $260 a week, that $265 a week at the subway, doesn't include overhead, food, equipment, rent, and so forth. This POS is full of crap. News Ninja Susan noting, these people are sounding just like a couple of rather famous people, Nicholas II and Louis XVI. Wonder if history will treat these guys the same way. The question is, will we treat these guys the same way? Susan continues, in the case of some millionaires, it just requires a filthy rich father. Yeah. Indeed. I don't want to pay for being American. I just want it to be my God-given right to... I mean, my God! Has John Campbell never even looked outside the United States? And not looked very far? This is, after all, a nation that has, what, 4% of the world's population and consumes 25% of its resources? Yeah. There are places on earth that being rich will not save you. And yet we're the ones who are in danger. I mentioned Agence Provocateur, probably mispronouncing that somehow or another. But I mentioned that in my conversation with Dr. Flowers because of, well... something that Lottie, our chat room moderator, sent along. Headline, Breitbart fantasizes about killing liberals. We outnumber them, and we have the guns.
Bring one. Sorry. I must say, in my non-strategic... because I'm under attack all the time. If you see it on Twitter, the tolerance, call me gay. I mean, it's just like they're vicious, the death threats and everything. And so there are times where I'm not thinking as clearly as I should, and in those unclear moments, I always think to myself, fire the first shot, bring it on. Because I know who's on our side. and they know that. They can only win a rhetorical and propaganda war. They cannot win. We outnumber them in this country, and we have the gun. So, I'm not kidding. They talk to me game, but they will not cross that line because they know what they're dealing with. And I have people who come up to me in the military, major named people in the military, who grab me and they go, thank you for what you're doing. We've got your back. And so...
ho, ho, ho! How about that? Ain't that funny? Ain't that funny, Andrew Breitbart saying that the American military's got a subversive element inside of it that's willing to come in and kill American citizens on his sorry ass's behalf? Ho, ho, ho! Ain't that funny? I don't care who you are, that's funny.
So they understand that. These are the unspoken things we know. They know. They know who's on their side. They've got Janine Garofalo. We are freaked out by that. When push comes to shove, they know who's on our side. They are the bullies on the playground, and they're starting to realize, what if we were to fight back? What if we were to slap back? You know, these union thugs, these public sector union thugs, I'm just waiting. Bring it on. I am sick of it. I'm sick of this Trumka guy. I'm sick of this John Sweeney. I'm sick of the SEIU. I'm sick of...
John Sweeney? John Sweeney hasn't been in the public eye for years. I mean, that's who Trumka replaced. And he wasn't exactly screaming to the barricades before he left. I'm sick of him. Jesus Christ.
And going to people's homes, executives' homes, and showing up, and the media not thinking, you don't think there's a problem with that? Katie Couric, what if we went to Katie Couric's house? What if the Tea Party showed up at Katie Couric's house and scared the living crap out of her teenage kids? And that's what they do because they know that the mainstream media won't cover it. And so, there's just a part of me that wants them to walk over that line.
I've told you before, I'll tell you again, they ache, the right wing does, for bloodshed. They yearn for it. They fantasize about it as they masturbate. Killing and death, murder and mayhem. Because in the right-wing mind, it's the same thing as sexual release. That's how twisted they are. That's why I constantly and continually remind myself as well as you that we will go nowhere with violence, because it's the one thing that they know how to do. When was the last time you saw a teabagger sit down in silent civil disobedience and get arrested and hauled away? How about never? They don't do that. They love the money too much. They don't want to pay the fine. They're a bunch of damn deadbeats. Oh, they wave their guns because they're hoping somebody will wave one back. And then for them, the fun starts. But they yearn for it. And I know it's hard. I know it. I'm not, it's hard for me. It's probably as or more difficult for you to comprehend the mind of someone who sits around going, damn, I wish I could just kill me some people. But they're real, and they're there. And all they've got to do is get one of us to get violent. And then what they consider to be fun begins. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I sent you an email yesterday. I don't know if you got it or not, but I was talking about the other day about the man calling in about mountaintop removal.
Right.
To the Washington Journal.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get the email?
I did indeed.
You know who it was?
It says Wayne.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't
know. Yeah,
I don't know if that's the boss man or not, but whoever.
Well, I think I would know his voice.
Right, and it, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a unique voice. No, it's not him. But whoever it is, they're well informed.
Well, maybe this person is on the front end of something that needs to be a campaign. Maybe a bunch of us need to start calling Washington Journal and saying, when are you going to pay attention to it?
I thought about that and email and everything else. They're on everything, Twitter and all like that, too. But anyway, yeah, I thought that'd be a good idea. But, yeah, he calls in every once in a while. And the way I found out who it was I thought, well, shoot, they have that recorded on there, so I just went back and listened.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I found it. What did you think about what the congressman told him?
Oh, what a moron.
Of course, he was hung up. Yeah. Well, that guy, he was not the worst, you know. He was more likable, but he was still a Republican, you know.
Look, anybody who says we need to let the states decide it has no idea what it's like to live around it. Because you know what? The states do decide it right now. And you know, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, or ostensibly protection, but who are we kidding? Juanita, they're craven little cowards. Their job is to, they are fluffers to the coal industry, and what the coal industry wants, the coal industry gets. There's no, there is not, you know, anything. At best, it is a sham.
Oh, I believe you.
So, yeah.
Another thing I wanted to say something about, I was, you know, switching from one channel to the other, and I, switched on to the hearing about the solar plant.
Mm-hmm.
And remember the senator from Texas, Joe Sunson, I think, that apologized at a hearing to the Exxon people.
Oh yeah, yeah. What was his name? Barton? Barton?
Who?
Barton?
Who? What?
I can't remember his name either.
But anyway, he's the one, he says that him and Michelle Bachmann, they like their carbon dioxide.
Right. Yeah, because it's natural. It's natural. It's all natural. There's no artificial ingredients in carbon dioxide.
Well, water, you know, is pretty natural, but I think you can drown in it, can't you?
Well, you can even be poisoned by it.
Yeah, I mean, especially some of your places up there. I mean, we've got places down here, too, where people have bad water all the time. But it seems like all the time. You know, you hear about it a lot, and nobody's doing anything about it. But what he was questioning this guy. I guess he represented that company, and the guy started to say something. He said, "That's not good enough. You got to do better than that." And I thought, "Well, you little twerp, you know."
Exactly.
You want to apologize to Exxon, and you know what it is. I mean, I think y'all were talking about it. About them wanting us to think, well, we can't afford it. Can't afford that solar power. We can't afford that wind power.
Well, the technology just doesn't really exist right now to make it viable.
Right.
It might work on a small scale, but it's never going to replace coal and oil and gas. Now, if we tried to do that with solar and wind, we'd all be freezing to death in the dark.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Lord, I know the script, Juanita. Oh, I got it.
But anyway, yeah, now I want to tell you that that's the way I found out that name. And but like I said, it wasn't Boss Man, because I know Boss Man's voice is
yeah.
different. Yeah. So anyway, can I ask you a nosy question?
Well, it depends on how nosy.
You'd be surprised what I find out when I ask about it. Anyway, why are you going to Kentucky?
They've run me off the property several times now. I don't try that anymore. that one stalking warrant was enough for me. I'm kidding.
Oh, okay.
No, we're going down there to do some training and get some teaching for how to be better activists. And how to work inside our communities to make our communities better places.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of folks from Coal River Mountain Watch going, and Ferg is going for his first time. Last year Margie went, next year Doodle will go.
Oh, that's nice.
And they all take the same course in leadership development, how to be a leader.
Well, forgive me for asking, but. You know, sometimes I do forget a little bit, but which one of your daughters was supposed to have her gallbladder removed?
Well, they've both had them out now. Margie just got hers out, and in fact, we were over at the doctor's office for a follow-up today. She seems to be healing nicely. And
well, they decided that she needed it, huh?
Yeah, they finally broke down when it got down to 26% of its normal function.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Mm. They waited until Doodles was down to 4%.
Oh, God. I see how they go to school with that.
Well, they don't. When your gallbladder goes bad, most of your time is spent, and I'm not trying to ruin anybody's supper, but regurgitating.
Yeah.
That's the nicest word I can come up with for it. But that's where most of your time goes.
Yeah, I've been through that. I know. I never could throw up, though, but you're very nauseated.
Oh, it's awful. It is just awful. And of course, they say it's almost like a pandemic around here, Juanita.
Yeah. Yeah.
Teenagers, kids, who are not supposed to have bad gallbladders.
I wonder if there's something at the school lunches.
No. Let's just say it's in the water.
You think that's...
Yeah, well, you know, that's just another part of the overall price that we pay for living in the coal-fired paradise that is West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Poison. Poison.
That's what y'all get.
Mm-hmm.
You ask for it. That's what you get. You should move. I heard people call in and say, you should move away from there.
Yeah, I'll just move. I'll move to one of my other vast estates.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, listen. I hope you have a wonderful trip and everything goes smooth. And
well, thank you very kindly, Juanita. We'll be leaving out early in the morning and be back probably late Friday evening.
And you make great headway in this problem, solving this problem.
Thank you very kindly. We will certainly try and. Well, no, I've been before, and I've learned a bunch already.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to take as many of the different learning tracks as I can, because there's never a shortage of stuff I don't know.
Oh yeah, well, that's good that you know that. You're not a know-it-all. You know, my problem has been with a lot of the protests that they did show on TV. You had a lot of people there that wanted, they were there for their own agenda, you know, to do their song or their poem or speak their mind, and it didn't have anything to do with what they were supposed to be there for. I know I saw one time for the families of the soldiers, and they were against the war. And very little was said about that. It was mostly people having their own agenda.
Well, I'm looking forward to the way that they've got this one structured in October, because it looks like with the committee structure that they've set up, there are going to be real opportunities to discuss things that really matter on the ground. And as Dr. Flowers said, that doesn't happen in the halls of Congress. You know, the people with the power decide what matters.
Yeah. You have to get facts out, because one way, I mean, that's the big problem, you know, with all this stuff on Fox, you know.
Right.
That's the big problem. Well, listen, I'll let you go, and you have a good night.
Well, you too.
Don't get rained on.
I'll try not to. Of course, we're not going to have to sleep in the trees or anything, so that's a real bonus. I know. I was talking about us being gone, but no, that's always a concern. Believe me. It is going to be busy though, because we'll get started about 8 o'clock in the morning, and generally don't finish till 5 in the afternoon. And That's a pretty long day of sitting and learning.
Yes, it is.
But there's a lot.
Do you ever hear from a guy anymore?
Who?
Guy James.
Oh yeah, I hear from him periodically.
How's he doing?
He's holding up. Working literally 7 days a week, just trying to keep his head above water.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's like this guy I heard on Washington Journal, I think, this morning. He works 10 hours a day. He works hard, and he makes a ton of money. But I deserve every penny of it.
Absolutely.
Kind of like the guy you were, talking about. I couldn't hear.
Well, that's fine if Warren Buffett wants to, but don't make me.
Right. Sometime I'll tell you something I saw about Warren Buffett. One of his sons.
Oh, really?
Anyway, yeah. I'll let you go and take care.
All right. You have a good night, Juanita.
And be a good little boy.
Oh, don't worry about me. Worry about Ferg. There's the challenge.
Okay.
All right. You take care, Juanita.
I wonder where he got that.
Oh, I have no idea. It probably comes from his mother's side.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. Juanita calling from Florida. It is going to be. It's always exciting to go down there because there are so many people of such goodwill who are at this particular meeting, and it's a chance for Ferg to look at a college campus too, because it's at the campus of Berea College. Down to the slight southeast of Lexington, and it's a lovely place, and I have a feeling he's going to be tickled pink to get a chance to wander around that campus. It is gorgeous, and you can't ask for much more in the way of an inspiring story of the college's founding. It was founded, 1859, specifically as a coeducational, multiracial institution of higher learning. And before it could ever accept a student, the Civil War intervened. Then, 1869, they started having classes and, letting black folk and white folk learn together. And so, naturally, the state of Kentucky legislature met specifically for the purpose of shutting down that school. Now, mind you, the Civil War was over. And the state of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, I'm sorry, not a state, it's a Commonwealth. The Commonwealth of Kentucky passed a law that said that school was just illegal. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court of the United States says, you're right, it is. State has a right to do that. You know, we point to things like Plessy versus Ferguson as an example of really bad decision-making on the part of the Supreme Court. But that one's equally bad. This wasn't a state-supported institution. It was a private school, right? Yeah.
But when it came to deciding who could go to their private school, especially if they had dark skin tones, well, suddenly that the state, it was a state's rights issue, you understand, said all the Kentucky colonels. It was a state's rights issue. And the state's got a right to make sure them people don't get no edumacating. Jesus. Our sad, our sorry, our wicked history. Now, I know that drives right-wing nuts crazy. Talk about the United States of America ever being wicked. But you know what? What else are you going to call it? Now, you know, George Bush, who didn't have quite so much of a vocabulary, he would have called it evil. Only he wouldn't have called that evil. No, it's just state's rights. But it was wickedness. It is wickedness to deny the human mind the opportunity to blossom, flourish, and grow. Wickedness, plain and simple. By the way, this is Moran Monday. Our buddy David in South Carolina, one of the many Davids. David in South Carolina reminding me, South Carolina should have its own reserved section on Moran Monday. Adding under the subject line, more tea cracker inbred infiltration of the NFL. I love that phrase, tea cracker. In addition to sportscasters going on and on this weekend about how Timmy Gebo is being persecuted, another sportscaster went into great detail to tell us all how Peyton Manning sought stem cell treatment for his neck injury, but that it was not that wicked old embryonic stem cells that they got from the murdered babies. The treatment Peyton was getting was using fat cells from Peyton's own tummy and butt areas. No shit, says David. Now I thought, damn, it's not even safe to watch football on TV. I gave up on network news, sought refuge in some sports content, and damn if the booger eaters didn't find their way into the game. And it's true. It's true. Go and listen to sports talk radio in just about any major metropolitan area, and you will find that it really has been infiltrated by right-wingerism. In part because a lot of right-wingers like sports. But in part also to channel our dear friend Horn resident Optimist Preston. In part because we let it happen. We don't participate. Oh, well, you know, if only they'd have a radio network that was devoted to cricket, or perhaps croquet, I might be enticed to listen occasionally. But this plebeian slamming of bodies one into another, well, it's just obscene. Bring me another flaming rum punch, would you, Muffy? By the way, regarding Congressman Fleming's salary as a congressman, Darlene wrote in a few minutes ago. She said his salary as a congressman, don't forget, the congressman is also making, what, $170,000 plus for doing nothing but keeping a seat warm on Capitol Hill? Oh, sorry. Let me correct myself. Keeping the seat warm except for the 5 weeks he gets off for vacation starting in August. And for all those other weeks off that John Boehner gives the House of Representatives whenever he feels the drunken urge. I hear this lovely, lovely vintage of Merlot coming in next week. I think we need to take time out and go and meet with our voters. Darlene asks, wonder if that's part of the measly 400 G's Representative Fleming has left over. Doubt it.
For most, the $170,000 alone that a congressman makes would be more than enough to live a decent, comfy life. Certainly, lobster dinners would be possible at least a few times a week. But you know, Darlene, if you can't have lobster every day, you know what you call that? Class warfare. That's class warfare. Because being American means that I should be able to have, as a rich person, I should be able to have lobster any time I choose it. That's what the free market is all about. I should be able to choose when I'm going to have my lobster lunch and my lobster dinner and my lobster breakfast and my lobster snacks. With a little garnish of hummingbird tongues. Little tiny little suckers, they're hard to get at. Got to catch them first. And see, you do some job creating when you get into the hummingbird tongue market. Because there ain't a lot of people out there can just catch them. That takes some special skills. Usually skills that are possessed by, well, Americans don't want the jobs in the hummingbird tongue private sector. Those jobs have to go to people with special hummingbird catching and detonguing skills. Yeah, it sounds like me being silly, doesn't it? But it's not that far removed from the way they actually talk. Mark writing in from Florida. The police in Miami paid $500 down and $500 for retrieval of cameras from the free trade protest in Miami. Primarily to known overtown homeless criminals. The police themselves robbed cameras from protesters at gunpoint in uniform. They also placed protesters that they thought looked like union marchers, except long-sleeved plaid shirts were more of the 70s look, with backpacks containing items they threw at their fellow uniformed cops so the horses could ride into the crowd. I was shot through my Che Guevara sign and hit in the clavicle. My hard hat sported a huge American flag. Yes, Bob, there are many who want people shot for real, including Breitfart. But it sounds to me like they've got this well under control. And because what happens is when you surround one of them nonviolently, the cops will come and come and rescue him. Would the D.C. police do that? I don't know. Would the Department of Homeland Security do it? Oh, hell yeah. Especially if it's a... what's the word I'm looking for here? Deemed to be dangerous. Not threatening. Not violent. Danger comes in many forms. And one of the most dangerous forms is honesty. When the day dawns that the power people figure out that we're serious and we mean to change this country for the better. Now, I'm not talking about eat the rich or any of that silly. No. Just making this country, giving this country a level of economic equilibrium similar to maybe what we had in 1953. I'm not talking about the social stuff, and don't crank up the Leave It to Beaver theme. But a growing middle class, an expanding middle class, hopefully an intolerance for abject poverty, and letting the rich just go on being what they are, rich, but making them pay for the privilege, or else letting them go be rich somewhere else. You know, there's only so much real estate available in Monaco. And for all that the Bahamas and the Cayman Islands and such are excellent tax havens, it's really, I don't care how rich you are, it's not the place you want to be when the hurricane's coming. No, you want a nice country far, far away from the... Right. So, wow, there goes 2 hours. Oh, Lottie in the chat room. Lottie's a funny man. Bob, there is no sauce on earth that can make the rich palatable. It's twoo, it's twoo. David in Tennessee, wolf nipple crisps. And you know where that comes from, right? That's from Monty Python's Life of Brian. That's the stuff that Brian is selling in the as a vendor in the arena. Ocelot's noses, wolf nipple crisps, hummingbird's tongues, lark's vomit canapes, lark's vomit, get your lark's vomit. Oh, you'll love it. It's delicious. David in Tennessee, wolf nipple crisps. Lordy, I do love that image. And to think, the labor it takes to properly prep the quite tender but chewy tissue so as to flash fry into a culinary delight. Oh, the overhead burden. The great unwashed have no idea what is required for a comfortable lifestyle. Yeah, that's what Daffy Duck says. I'm socially secure. I'm comfortably well off. And with regard to little Timmy Jibo, David notes, little Timmy comes to Nash Vegas this Sunday. Likely he'll never take the field. That said, he might. Lordy goodness, I love it if on some almost drawn-in-the-dirt play that took Timmy onto LP Field here, he got his head knocked clean off. Oh, please, gods of the pointed ball, let it happen. Pretty please. with that one, David, I will join you in that prayer. Ron and Raleigh, the rich don't need no stinking FEMA, according to St. Ron of Paul. Right, because they can get away. That's the same crowd that left... In the advance of Katrina, left to safety and looked back to all the people that didn't have vehicles and said, well, why ain't they leaving? Muffy, darling, why didn't they get in their Bentley and leave? I don't understand. Jesus. So look, this is the only evening we have for conversation. I mean, I'm happy to filibuster. I'm happy to filibuster. But if you want to do some conversation radio, you've got an hour to get it done in. We will take a break and come back. And hopefully your calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4. Head on 304-658-3333 on your nickel and email to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. We have never, except for like me screwing up with the buttons, we've never lost a caller yet. So if you want to be a first-time caller, now is the time to work up thy courage. This is the horn.
I can hear the wheels of automobile. So far away, just moving along through the drifting snow. It's times like these when the temperatures freeze. I sit alone, looking at the world through a storm window. Down on the beach, Sandman sleeps. country band that plays for keeps. I bought the rights to the inside fights. Watched the man just beating his hand against the storm window. A miles away, old hills and slates. A candle burns, a witch's flames. Silence is golden, till it screams.
Because I know I'm going to be away for 4 days. And, you know, lest anyone think that that's my monumental ego, I ain't got one. and I'm pretty damn humble when it comes right down to it. I've worked hard to develop that. No, I just miss you guys. And I miss the conversation. And the tomfoolery. And the carrying on. That's all. And I know that it's going to be another weird month next month. I mean, there's a lot of Gone Bob next month. Probably a couple of weeks worth of it. Then hopefully things settle down in November and December. And oh, Jesus, the war on Christmas is about to start.
Ow!
David in Tennessee says, I just loves me the image of some Brer Bear type in Titans blue having that much desired for that much desired four-step start with an oh-so-unprotected by either man or God little Timmy. Mine! That one's mine! Says Elijah Muhammad Johnson, ex of Georgia Agriculture and Eligibility Junior College located in a burg in Georgia that has no zip code. Mine! He's mine! Please, gods of the pointed ball, please! Georgia Agricultural and Eligibility Junior College. I'll be back in a minute. Georgia Agriculture and Eligibility. I'm sorry, I'm a college football fan, and that just grabbed me good. I did not. Our good buddy Tosh is a Maryland Terrapins fan, and he was pleased to note that there had been no gloating emails from me over the weekend about the Mountaineer game. What was to gloat over? Went like a house afire in the first half, and then just sort of put it in neutral and started trying to run out the clock with the second half kickoff, and about got the daylight scared out of us. I don't know yet if the Mountaineers have figured out a way to create their Ark of the Covenant and take their 350-pound lump of blood-soaked coal with them on the road yet. They rub on it for good luck. Ew. They're going to get interesting this Saturday, though. Them Tigres from LSU coming up to visit in Morgantown. Sure would be nice if it'd snow. It's probably the first and only time you'll hear me say something like that. Cold people from Louisiana. I like the idea. This in from Chris, otherwise known as Psychoticus. Greetings and salutations, Bob. Thanks for letting me go on like an idiot last time after catching up on a couple of weeks' worth of podcasts. I had all kinds of things I wanted to talk about, and it helped. Onward. Okay, neo-Nazis exist. I get it. Neo-Nazis aren't ashamed to be seen in public. Thank you, Fox, GOP, and Teabaggers. Neo-Nazis copyright their videos? Here's a link to a copyrighted neo-Nazi video of 30 to 40 of their fat white idiots attacking residents of a neighborhood in which they have their adolescent clubhouse. Apparently 30 to 40 against 5 to 10 is their idea of a righteous show of force and obvious supremacy of their cause. Do note that those odds they can only intimidate to a standstill. Several of their members still leave bleeding and clutching various wounds and immediately flee at the first sign of the cops. I'm really not sure what to think about this. Their obvious lack of shame and willingness to show their crimes on film. Their lack of shame and their willingness to show their crimes on film is an indictment of the local law enforcement, but I'm sure there's more. Honestly, I see idiots wearing swastikas around their arms and my eyes go red and start asking why they're not dead. I'm not minded to extend anything like charity, let alone humanity, to these life fails. So if I understand Chris correctly, 30 to 40 of their fat, pasty-faced, doughy selves couldn't beat five... Oh, my. Well, no one ever accused them of being the National Merit semifinalists, Chris. And you did not go on and on like an idiot. That was a delightful conversation. Stop that. Ron and Raleigh, I still say I want little Timmy to get up close and personal with Julius Pepper. Well, Julius can take a number, Ron. Right after Nash Vegas. Yes, David, you scored with the junior college quip. It's the eligibility part. But if you start explaining why things are funny, well, agricultural ineligibility, junior college. Oh, God, I got to go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Are the phones lit up?
The lighting.
Okay, that's good. To keep them lighting up, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. Now call in right now. Now's your last time to call in.
For the week.
For the week, right.
Apply directly to the ear.
Right, apply directly to the ear. And then Bob has to go traveling on his long epic Escalade with a helipad on back that he has.
Don't forget the hot tub.
Oh yeah, the hot tub as well. I heard a great quote for the Horn Lexicon, and I think we're stealing it. And it's going in, and it's this: the Democrats see the glass as half empty, and the Republicans just see it as theirs.
Bingo. You know, I was going there. You, well, the minute you said the Democrats see the glass as half empty, the Republicans see it as all theirs.
And I mean, the visual, if anyone wants to print up some bumper stickers or T-shirts, it's such an easy visual to sell, too.
Oh, yeah. Mine, all mine.
Right, and that's exactly.
I don't care if you call it half empty or call it half full, I call it mine.
And that's exactly what we're seeing right now, and it looks like we're going to need to push back twice as hard. And I don't know how exactly we're going to do that currently at this time, but maybe we'll have some luck in the future. But for now, I guess it's just gripping on with your nails.
Yeah, and hanging on for literally dear life. You know, you just created a little image in my mind.
Yeah.
We need a little, you know, street theater is so cool. I don't know if you've ever been around when it's being done, but it's often done in these sort of protest demonstration situations. A good friend of mine by the name of Viv does an excellent Don Blankenswine, all done up with the top hat and the snidely whiplash mustache and all of that. Somewhere that teabaggers or peg lickins of any stripe are gathered, you know what we need? David, we need us some street theater types who are adept at gymnastics. You know those kind of tumbling routines where you've got two people and, like, you know, the one will be up. Right, you know what I mean. Well, we need one dressed up like, you know, with the pinstripe pants and the morning coat and the top hat and all the ascot and all that silly shilly-shally crap. And we need to have a smaller person dressed up like a working stiff American.
Mm.
And the fat cat needs to literally, in front of a bunch of teabaggers, pick up the littler person by the ankles and shake them real good till all the money falls out of their pockets. And the car keys. And, you know, we could stuff the pockets with stuff like, you know, home mortgage, retirement plan, pension, health care. Just keep shaking till it all comes out and then say, well, come here, y'all want it.
Right, and then you could have, like, it could be like a surreal theater like they do in England where you break the third wall, so to speak, and you have people running around the audience screaming mine, trying to take people's money out of the audience.
Well, that's where you sort of do a reverse on them, and you plant that you plant some people amongst the teabaggers to come running out going, I want it all, it's mine. Oh, wouldn't that be good? See the kind of stuff that happens here.
That would be some interesting theater to watch. Right.
Last week we came up with a brilliant piece of possible legislation to stop people like firefighters and city workers and cops and sanitation workers and stuff from getting ripped off by, say, 2,000 or 3,000 teabaggers in little towns like Hollywood, Florida. And then tonight we're brainstorming street theater. We are a well-rounded bunch, aren't we, David?
The Horn Street Theater Tour coming soon to a city near you.
The Horn Players.
Yes. I'm sure some sponsors will jump on board for that one as well.
Yeah, I won't hold my breath.
But I did want to say that It seems to me that what we're going through in this term of this cycle, and the fact that people are getting a little bit more on edge as this country teeters and totters into the next phase, whatever that happens to be. I don't know. I don't really know exactly. I was thinking about this the other day. I really hope that a lot of people get on Ustream and start teaching classes, and I'm serious about that. Because a lot of people aren't going to be able to afford college. They're going to be scared to go to schools, or they're not going to want to go to schools because...
Or not be able to afford to go to schools.
Right, or because a lot of the classes are overcrowded and the teachers are... and the teachers, there aren't that many... The classes are too crowded and there's fewer teachers. So, I mean, I just see that as an opportunity for a lot of progressives who want to get right at the cutting edge to start doing online classes and filling up those Ustream channels like crazy.
Well, you know, we're trying to do our part because, like I said, we will be having another Dr. Bill chat a week from tonight.
Mm.
And it'll be part of the ongoing Prism American History series. And it'll be video and live audio. Now, it might the audio, and just so folks will know, the audio might run over.
Mm-hmm.
So since Rick starts at since Rick Smith starts at 9 o'clock, and I would never dream of preempting him, I'll be shutting down the horn stream for the Dr. Bill chat at 9 or a little before. But it will all continue on it will never be interrupted on Ustream. So it'll all be there in toto.
Well, that's good. We need all the knowledge and wisdom we can get in these. These coming months that we have. I just wanted to let you know before I let you go, you should take that Joe Rogan podcast with you and listen to it on the road.
I've started listening to some of it and it was quite good.
Yeah, I mean it's
And by the way, the other thing you mentioned, I have seen Red State.
Oh yes. And what did you think?
That was a really disturbing film, David.
I know.
I mean that was like David Lynch disturbing.
I know, but I
mean, it wasn't Blue Velvet, but
yeah. I think, but here's the thing about it. I think, well, for starters, I think Michael Madsen is going to get the. I keep saying Michael Madsen, Michael Parker, I think.
Yeah, Parker.
Okay, Parker. I think he's going to get an Academy Award nomination. Those church scenes with the music and the accompanying visuals. Definitely put me in a frame of mind.
You think the Academy would actually nominate something like that?
Oh, yes, I do. I do. I mean, they've done it before. They did it with what was it with Pulp Fiction?
True.
So again, and also I think you know it's the fact that it's one of those Academy gimmies where the actor is in his golden years and they're like, oh that guy could die tomorrow. We better give him the nomination. He's playing somebody crazy, and this is a Kevin Smith film, and all that kind of thing. It's not to say that he'll get the award. It's just to say they'll give him the nod.
Well, and, you know, the Hollywood types always say that the nomination is the award.
Right. And they always want to give it to someone. They always want to have one of those crazy, crazy roles where the Academy is just like, standing back and saying, "See, we're cutting edge. We give everyone a fair shot."
And it didn't happen last night, but I guess Bourdain's production team grabbed another Emmy here in the last few days for photography or cinematography or something like that.
Well, the other thing I wanted to mention was.
And he's signed on to write like 5 books over the next 3 years. So
wow! Did you hear about were you listening to the podcast long enough where he was talking about his different projects that he's doing?
I didn't get there yet. No.
One of the things he's talking about is he's going to be doing a graphic novel next year, and it's going to be released next fall.
Oh yeah. And that'll be fun.
And the other thing is that Anthony Bourdain, he's going to be, he just finished taping the a podcast with Mark Maron, so that should be good as well.
Oh, that, yeah, very definitely so.
And one last thing before I go, because this will excite you. Joe Rogan just locked down the date for doing a podcast with, guess who, Bob?
Bring it.
Graham Hancock.
Oh, man.
And that'll be archived, probably. If you check back Monday, it'll
that,
be
there. You know, it'll be fascinating. I read the first two big books that he wrote, and
right.
there's some compelling information in there. I don't know if it stands up to sort of academic scrutiny, but the simple fact that he was willing to sort of launch a couple of barbs toward that officious jackass, Zahi Hawass,
mm-hmm.
The director of antiquities in Egypt,
right?
Who is the guardian? You know, it's like he's some. It's not like he's the director of antiquities. It's like he's the guardian of orthodoxy regarding what Egypt was.
Well, you know, I think how Hancock has rubbed the wrong way on so many people is because his mixture of cosmology and the drug experimentation talks that he's mixed together. But here's the thing that I would say to a lot of people who don't take Graham Hancock serious or don't want to take him serious now. You have to keep in mind that all of these academics, they would never go where he went.
Oh, no, they wouldn't. But, no, what's off-putting, and I'll get emails about this, okay, David?
Yeah.
But anytime the ancient astronauts start, if I see that they're even sneaking toward the curtain stage left, like they're about to make an entrance, I start going, oh, nuts. Because I mean, anybody who gets into the really serious ancient part of human history, you know, the first thing you know is that there's more you don't know than what you do.
Right.
Because it's not, I mean, among other things, they were pre-literate societies, and so they weren't, you know, they didn't leave us anything in writing. And so we, you know, and I'm sure, well, I won't speak for him, but I have a feeling Dr. John would agree with me that piecing together a culture out of nothing but its artifactual remains is what makes it both challenging and exciting and awfully damn difficult. You know, just figuring out what something was. I remember that History of Celtic Britain series.
Right.
I think I saw like three chunks of it. I never got to finish it. But there were assumptions made in that, and I would write off to John. I'd say, you know, watch this. Tell me if I'm losing my mind. And he'd write, no, Bob, you're not losing your mind. You know, it always has to be a kingship. It always has to be. And the wound was carved by the sword when it went through the base of his skull because it was a ritual murder for the Fisher King. And blah, 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 blah. And it's, again, it's that orthodoxy where nothing else is permitted to be considered. Like, dude was a klutz and tripped over his own sword, and they felt sorry for him and gave him a good burial. You know, no, that can't possibly be it.
I think it has to do with a lot of gimmicks for marketing, drawing in an audience, because a lot of people can't take a dry cultural history of different civilizations, and there needs to be a bit of that intrigue and mystery with it. That's why he covers subjects like...
Well, I mean, the stuff that we lost in the Americas simply because of the fervent religious zeal of the Spanish and the Portuguese, you can't overestimate that. I mean, Jesus,
right.
There were books, and they were made of fawn skin and tree bark fiber. You know, kind of the way, you know, and oh, tree bark fiber, some paper, oh, yeah, papyrus was pounded out papyrus reed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't look down our noses at that, but no, they were mounded up into huge heaps and set ablaze by the Spanish. You know, we would love to, there's fascinating speculation about the quipu, the little knotted string affairs that the Andean peoples used.
Right.
It may have actually been not simply mnemonic, it may have actually been freaking writing in textile form. But we'll never know because the Spanish roasted it. Because they were afraid it had demons in it.
And I mean, there are an abundance of questions. You know, the statuary and stylistic forms are fascinating. You know, Jesus, that one book that our buddy Lee in Texas read and sent along to me, 1421, the year the Chinese discovered America.
Right.
It was speculative the way that Graham Hancock is speculative. And I don't object to it until, well, you know the old concept, David, of the deus ex machina from ancient Greek drama, where when the playwright got himself into a spot, wrote himself into a spot that he couldn't get out of?
Right.
Deus ex machina is Latin for God from the machine. And the deus ex machina was literally a crane off stage, and you'd put a harness on the actor who has a god mask on, and of course the toga and, you know, whatever, and they flew him out onto the stage on the crane, and he made things go poof and made everything happen the way that it needed to happen to finish out the story. Well, that's kind of where I am with the ancient astronauts. Anytime you have to go ancient astronaut, that means that you've quit on trying to understand how human conduct and human behavior works. You know, and then they got fire because the red-headed stranger brought it from Tiwanaku. Don't!
I think though that with his studies regarding marijuana and mushrooms, I think he's gone a bit far. This is what Joe Rogan's going to cover on his podcast, supposedly. A lot of this area, not so much the ancient astronauts, and that's really fascinating. Talking about the history of mushrooms through the centuries and what it provides to the artist or this or the scientist or the archaeologist, and that's why he's on the so-called edge of that.
Well, and I mean, you know, it's taken as a given that from the moment they could figure out how to do it, human beings, like most other animals on the planet, I might add, have found a substance that alters their consciousness.
Right.
Okay? For some birds, it's berries. I don't know if you saw the story out of Sweden. You know, I felt like sending an email off to our buddy Scott saying, hey, leave the mooses alone, buddy. No, it was a moose in Sweden got absolutely drunk off its ass.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Eating fermented apples. Okay?
Yeah.
Cidered up. And they and wound up, the moose climbed the apple tree. And the photograph was of the moose just sitting there with this, you know, Foster Brooks look on his face, her face. It was a moose cow.
Right.
And virtually every, you know, there are no Mormon animals who don't change their consciousness and just, you know, get through life with a smile on their face, a glass of milk, and golden plates. That doesn't exist naturally in the world. All animals alter their consciousness one way or another, and it can be, you know, we do caffeine, we do alcohol, mushroom, yeah, and it goes back in time to, you know, I mean, there's evidence. There's I've read about in the past that, you know, of little cauldrons on the steps of Russia that have hemp seeds in the bottom of it. Hint, there's no reason to burn hemp unless you're, you know, getting a face on. It's part of our human consciousness. But the problem is that human beings being what human beings are, I always have to deal with my basic suspicion that that guy who ate the mushrooms and everybody else was sitting around the fire just kind of looking at him while he was writhing on the ground and spitting on himself and stuff. As soon as he sobered up, he looked at everybody else in the cave and said, you know what happened to me last night? Well, you know, geez, Gronk, you were laying on the ground and rolling around like an animal and spewing and spitting and throwing up and carrying on. That's what we figured. No, that's not what happened to me, Og. What happened, Gronk? The gods spoke to me. Really? Well, what did the gods say? They said, you're all supposed to do what I tell you. Because I've had the vision. Boom.
Yeah, there,
religion
there is
born.
That, yeah, there is that problem with it. I just think as a source for knowledge and information, to hear a discussion with him, with someone like Joe Rogan, it's worth the price of admission. And Joe Rogan is pretty fair about how he treats a lot of subjects.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just what I heard was quite impressive.
Yeah. So for people who want to check it out, you can probably check it out sometime when they upload it on Monday.
Website?
JoeRogan.net. And, Bob, you have a wonderful trip, and I will talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, David. Have a good evening.
Bye.
Bye now. I just love the place that my conversations with David go. Pardon me. It's a diversion, I guess. But I like to talk about everything. That's, you know, that I've called talk radio shows in the past, like right wing. Well, do you want to talk about what he's talking about? Not really. Well, you don't get on. How engaging is that? That's just reinforcement. That's not conversation. Oh, by the way, I mentioned Zahi Hawass, David in Tennessee, subject line, that Hawass asshat. That pompous windbag was the model for the orangutan in Planet of the that ran the Department of Science and Truth. Short version, him prick. And, you know, he always shows up on the... We consulted Zahi Hawass. And it's always some explanation of orthodoxy. That doesn't admit of any other possibility. So maybe, you know, I guess that's my problem. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Well, hey, what's up?
How are you? A lot of things. I've just been, you know, listening to, Breitbart's mouth and thinking about how many years of working in saloons and putting up with fools like that, and it was good because we had some bouncers in the place I was playing that one guy was a 6'4" tour gunner in Vietnam. Another guy had done about 10 or 12 in that local pen, and these boys were hard asses. I mean, it was enjoyable to watch these troublemakers make a rapid exit, you know. But what got me last week was all of 9/11 stuff, and I was working an audio book called Kennedy, Khrushchev, Castro, and the Brink of Nuclear War, and I had lived through that, you know?
Yeah.
And I was in my late teens then. I'm an old fart, you know? And I didn't know what was going on, and I read the book, and I said, if I had heard all this, I would have owned stock in an underwear company in those days, you know? It was pretty scary times, man. But this this thing, of course, what's going on now, it takes me so far back to that the anti-Vietnam era, and a lot of the kids that were protesting the war disappeared when the draft lottery didn't call them up, and their politics disappeared with it, and they went back to their parents' business and kind of forgot the whole system, and as did I. I got fairly successful at what I did, and, you know, and houses, cars, fishing, all the music, all the things that were my life took me away from politics. And now I think it's worse than it was then.
I think you're probably right for a variety of reasons. Not the least of which is created almost solely by the for-profit media.
Yeah.
Because they foster, among other things, they foster the dreaded false equivalence. For instance, you know, if there's if we show up on October 6th at Freedom Plaza in D.C. and there's 10,000 of us, and there's three idiots with misspelled teabagger signs,
they'll get the pictures. Yeah,
they'll get pictures, and it'll be disagreement as to fill in the blank as far as the issue is concerned.
And, you know, people don't realize. Sometimes I was working on one of those old hullabaloos on a Saturday night, either late April or early May, and the kids came in and they told me, man, they had just burned the ROTC building in Kent. And my reaction was, man, I don't know if they're going to hold still for that. Well, you know what happened what, May the 2nd, May the 3rd, 70?
Yeah.
In Kent? Yeah. Because I've always had this opinion, if you lean too hard on these guys, it can be very, very, very scary. And I don't know how, and it seems the media is not, is so much different. You hit it right on the head. The media of Walter Cronkite and company is a lot different than what we get today.
Well, and it's gone. It's gone.
Yeah, I emailed you in reference to that Wall Street thing. A friend of mine sent me an article from the UK, you know, the newspaper. And I had not heard a thing about it. And Bob, what bothers me more...
And shame on me that I haven't mentioned it. What you're talking about is the Occupy Wall Street event, and Dr. Flowers mentioned it in our conversation. Started
yeah,
over the weekend.
Yeah.
Started over the weekend. Had huge participation, and it was crickets in the for-profit media. So shame on me as a non-member of the for-profit media for not mentioning it, and I'm glad you brought it up.
And Bob, my computers are constantly tuned to Hartman. I even listen to Schultz because of his labor standpoint. Stephanie and her bunch kill me. I wake up laughing in the morning, but I don't hear a word about this Wall Street thing. It's like, wait a minute, you guys are supposed to be on that side of the dial here, folks. How come nobody mentions it? And these are people who are in the line of politics, supposedly, that we are.
And I don't know what the answer to that is right off the bat, except, and this is not as meant as a criticism of anybody, I think, for starters, I think Stephanie Miller serves, and that genius gang that she has around her, they serve a vital purpose. Because being able to laugh and get your day started with a laugh, it's like orange juice. You know, it's how the day ought to start. It's, you know, it's the bagel with the cream cheese that gets the day going.
Deflating windbags has a pleasant sound to it when they do it.
Mm-hmm. Because it never seems overtly mean. You know, I'm mean, and I know I am. But
you too, huh?
But,
I am, I know.
But they do it with such good humor and grace and such brains. But you've also got to, and again, this is not a criticism, and I don't want hate mail or, oh, how dare you.
No.
These are shows that are operating within the structure of for-profit media.
For-profit media, yeah. It's just that this idea of going to Wall Street and raising Cain should be mentioned.
Well, yeah, but by the same token, you know, I watch my Twitter feed and everything, and I'm sorry, I remember everybody's voice, but tell me again, please, the first name.
My name's William.
Yeah, William, okay.
I'm from up here in the city where your dad was in the hospital.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. How can I get at this? I was watching my Twitter feed, and it drove me a little bit crazy because there were even people on our side saying things like, "Oh, great. Occupy Wall Street on a Saturday when there's nobody there." Well, that's smart.
It's a good start.
It's a good start. And you know what? On a Saturday and a Sunday when there's nobody there, that's when you establish your ground.
Yep.
You know, you don't go take ground that's already held. You take the ground when it's not occupied, so then they have to deal with you.
Bob, some of the best fishing I did was after I flew over the lake in a seaplane type thing, and I could spot all the weed beds and drop-offs and knew where to put the boat because I'd pick my ground out. I'd pick my out where I was going to work, you know. And they're doing the same thing, and it should be done because this is the main difference that I see between the 60s and now is the money game. I see Wall Street has a history of this, though. My granddad taught me when I was a kid about a panic in the 1890s, a depression.
And that was the whole reason for regulating the economy was because America, in many ways, is a long history of economic upheavals. You know, there was the Great Panic of this year and the Depression of that year, and it was just a constant boom and bust cycle through, and it ruined people. And, you know, you always had a cadre of very, very rich people who benefited no matter which way the pendulum swung.
Swung, yes.
But you had the vast majority of Americans who were caught between the hammer and the tongs on the anvil.
Yeah, that was the first thing that got me going was discovering the music of Woody Guthrie and the Depression era songs that he wrote. A Dust Bowl Refugee and Hard Traveling and of course Steinbeck, which things the kids don't read in school anymore. Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, for instance, used to be, you had to read it when I was a kid.
Right, but now, I'm sure that there's some church group out there, or God knows, David Horowitz and that creepy crowd. Well, they're just trying to turn them into little liberal pinkos.
Well, those were tough times, like my friends, I said, you know how all those great country performers ended up in Bakersfield? I think most of them went out there in the Dust Bowl days, and the family settled, and these guys became great performers of country music, you know. And things happen for, there's usually a reason behind things happening, I was on the radio last night on a local college station, and we got a call while I was on the air from a guy in Texas who got on the air and just slanged Perry from one end of Texas to the other.
Oh, he is not the monolithically popular man that they would have you believe. And among other things, he's got problems right now because all of a sudden, for some reason or another, Texas has begun hemorrhaging jobs. And it might be because there's no damn money to support the jobs anymore, because the jobs that were the Texas Rick Perry miracle were government jobs that he didn't like in the first place unless he could pull them around in a little red wagon to make some pretense of having created them. You know, the governor of Texas is one of, if not the least powerful governors in the entire United States. I mean, pathetic.
Yeah, very little power in the governor's chair in Texas, yes. Compared to, Ohio for sure.
You know, to suggest that a Texas governor somehow does this or that with the economy, it's fantasy to begin with, because there's not that much to do. There's not that much government there. You know, ask the unemployed, ask the homeless, ask the uninsured in their millions in Texas how proactive the government is. And it's not.
Yeah. It's not productive at all. And they've, there's so many things that I've been through because of the accident of when you were born. You guys will see a hell of a lot more of it than I am, and I feel real bad. I have grandkids, and you have children that are that age. You have grandkids too, don't you?
Yeah, I do. The oldest one is 4, and I'm scared.
Yeah, because we don't know what they're gonna face. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, I grew up poor in a housing project, but you could move away from it if you could challenge yourself to go out and work at something, because there was work.
Yeah.
And that's what kids today don't get, because they didn't see it. They don't think about it. And a friend of mine's a retired history teacher, and he claims that the teaching of history has changed. And he's in a suburban system one county east of us, where I am now. And he claims that, you know, he can't teach the way he used to. They don't, you know, the books and such aren't the same. And you don't teach things. You don't teach the truth. I enjoy the Marine. What's it from Florida?
It's Mark.
Yeah, when he brought out that thing on Pat Robertson, I had seen that in the book, but the author wouldn't name the guy. But I thought of him right away because I knew his father had been a senator. And I mean, I learned so much from the people Sandra can leave me in the dust. You know, she gets.
No, she leaves me in the dust too. And I mean, but it's mind expanding, isn't it?
Yep. And Albert, he's my kind of guy. That guy is. I relate right away to him.
Yeah, Albert got fan mail over the weekend. People saying,
oh, yeah.
You know, I'm just, you know.
Well, he's an enjoyable guy. The whole show is. I'm gonna hang on anymore. It's the first time I ever called, and I'm not real big on calling, but.
Well, you've done fine though. I mean, you know, you haven't felt like you were gonna fall over or anything. You're doing just great, William.
Well, I used to do it locally here, but Cleveland is down to one local talk show, and it's a guy who used to be a guy who called in to sports talk shows as a client, as a caller. And his, well, there used to be a TV show or radio show about a guy like this. He's called Pays to Be Ignorant. That was an old old radio show and TV show in the 50s. But, yeah, it's just, we're talking about, I'll leave you with one thought about Wall Street. Yeah, the stock market mess destroyed my grandfather's business. Yeah, some stockbroker jumped out a window and landed right on his push cart. Anyway, you have a good one. I'll talk to you again.
He'll be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
Oh, yes. Hey, if you can't laugh once in a while, you know, it's either, gee, shall I laugh or shall I look for the cyanide, you know?
Yeah, right. And, you know, keep laughing. Although, I got to tell you, there was a story, speaking of Sandra, she sent me a story out of Georgia this weekend. A woman was killed and several others were sent to the hospital. You mentioning cyanide reminded me. Because of some vapor or gas or something that got loose at a McDonald's.
Crying out loud.
So, you know, until they get it sorted, stay away from McDonald's, will you?
Well, Bob, I hate to even think about the food that I eat today because God only knows what agribusiness put the stuff together and the inspections under GW, the inspectors did a disappearing act. And as you know, if you're not part of the industry under Bush, you didn't get an inspection job or a job to keep something. I'm talking to you. Look at the coal mining industry. And Matewan was one of the best movies I think I ever saw.
It is an amazing film. And you know, it's funny. There's a couple of different lines from that film that are just, they're like stock call and response inside my family. After a particularly bad day, we'll get in the vehicle and I'll look at Agnes and say, "Let's roll, Griggsy." And she'll respond, "The sooner we get out of this shithole, the better." Yeah,
You know, to me, I have that strong sense of, man, at the end of the thing when the whole town and the Baldwin Phelps guys are running into the river, I said, yes. Because, well, we know, you like Dashiell Hammett, I know, from writing back and forth. And Hammett, of course, worked for the Pinkertons.
Yeah, he was a Pinkerton man.
Yeah, that's where he got his, they said he could follow a drop of water from the west coast of China and never lose it. He was the shadow man.
And, you know, you really see that in terms of his writing. There's not a lot of it available on Kindle, and I'm a complete Kindle freak now, William.
I get by with the audio books, you know.
Yeah, but there's one book of his called Red Harvest.
Yes.
And it's really, really dated. But it's it really gives you a sense for the fact that this guy had Dashiell Hammett had honed his chops as an operative.
Yeah.
And he really brings out what an amoral undertaking it was in the first place.
Well, there's so much in Hammett and in Chandler where you get a picture of the society at the time these men were writing, a part of the society that never gets talked about.
Yeah. Well, even the Thin Man stories are that way, even though it's the supposedly the upper crust is like that. And I got to tell you, I don't know if it's out for an audiobook. You'll have to check. But I just finished today reading this Richard K. Morgan novel, Market Forces. And I can't say enough good about it. And you get to the end of the book,
and he gives you a list of books that he read in preparation for writing the book. Now, it's fiction, and it's set about 50 years in the future, not 500, but 50. And the top of the list is Noam Chomsky.
Oh, my.
And he also read Michael Moore. And you can see and you don't see it till you get to the end of the book, but you see the bleed over in it. And what he's done is he's extrapolated predatory corporate culture by about 50 years into the future just to see where it goes. And it is, you know, a great plot and character development, but there are some observations along the way that you just have to sit, you got to go back and check it out again, because it's just freighted with so much truth. The same way that Raymond Chandler was, the same way that Dashiell Hammett was.
Well, the classic Chandler story where he's one of the villains is a doctor who takes care of Hollywood drunks and druggers, and this is like 1940, I think it was Lady in the Lake this guy was part of, this character. And this is, I remember when Michael Jackson passed away with this doctor's stuff. I said, so what else is new? Look at Elvis and the doctors, what they were doing with him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have enough dough, you can, hell, I knew about five guys that were getting a prescription for morphine every day from an old doctor here in the 60s. It was costing them $1.50 a day, and the doctor got busted. Now, here's these five suburban kids trying to get $150 a day for smack, you know, for heroin.
Yeah.
And, man, well, these guys out of place. I mean, these guys, yeah, be right. My dad got popped in 46 with a pound of reefer. But what saved his butt was that my uncle, my dad's brother, worked for the guy that ran the an organization not far from where Cleveland Clinic is. I don't know how far away from the clinic you got when you were in town with your dad.
Well, we drove straight into the middle of town and turned right on Euclid, you know.
Yeah, because at 93rd Street, if you came out of there in 1960 and walked east on Euclid, you'd be in the middle of what would have to be called Cleveland Storyville in 1960. Because I was hanging out there when I was 17. I was one of these kids that wanted to learn quickly, you see. And I did. I learned too quickly some ways. Anyway, you go ahead on and be careful and enjoy, you know, enjoy the time in Kentucky. You will meet several wonderful people, I'm sure.
Oh,
and what's Joe Bajan's other book beside the one I just got through twice now?
Deer Hunting with Jesus is the first one.
Yeah.
And then Rainbow Pie.
Rainbow Pie, that's the one I could remember, yeah.
And then there's a book of his essays coming out.
Okay, because a friend of mine who I recommended the book to, a woman, she wrote back to me and said, you know, there's stuff of his on the net.
Yeah, those are the essays, but Rainbow Pie is not, and Deer Hunting with Jesus isn't.
Yeah, I usually get them through the Library of Congress, but if I can get them on audio, I'll spring for it. I put the money away for a couple months, and I'm retired now, you know, and I don't play like I used to, that's for sure. In a way, I don't miss it, because the music business has got it.
Yeah, but by God, I've got the evidence to prove it. You could make a harp holler.
Yeah, I was a player in my youth. I was lucky. There's positives to everything, Bob. Being around the projects in the 1950s and listening to them stuff my neighbors were playing on their phonographs opened my eyes to a whole new type of music and said, oh my. And then in the 60s, there was that big revival. Bunch of guys from Chicago got a kick to it. In fact, the thing Help, the movie, I know one guy whose Help was instrumental in his life, and that was guitar player Michael Bloomfield, because the woman who did the housekeeping brought, you know, tuned the radio to blues, and Bloomfield was a tremendous player when he was alive. And
indeed.
What you're exposed to sometimes is... you know, you learn from every culture.
Well, and that's why I try to expose. You know, Ferg is the house musician here, and growing and learning by leaps and bounds, and that's why I try to expose him to as much different stuff as I possibly can.
Well, Bajan talks about playing walking blues, and I'm dying because that's one of my songs that I've loved forever since Robert Johnson and Paul Butterfield cut a great version, and I recorded it myself. And, you know, it's been good to me. Hey, it's been good talking to you, man, and just hang in. That's all I can say.
Thank you, William. Awful good talking to you. I'm so glad you called.
Thank you, sir.
And bye now. William calling from the Cleveland area. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Get the fuck off.
What? What? Nah, you. Waited all that time to say that. Nice. So, we come to the end of the program. And I'll catch you Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. Remember, we have a Dr. Bill Prism West Virginia History Chat coming up a week from tonight. And that'll start, I think, about 7:30. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this work. It is much appreciated. You with your contributions, your ideas, your chat in the chat room. Lottie, Sparky, our chat room moderators, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Reverbo, our op-ed columnist at headonradionetwork.com, a cavalcade of crazy, my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee, who writes a pretty mean one-liner, too, you might note, from earlier this evening. And John Fox, who is terribly, terribly busy these days, but still finds time to help keep things going around here. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Never sends a bill, but always needs your help. He makes all the streams do what the streams do here at the Horn. And, of course, the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Membership is cheap and easy. Join Coal River Mountain Watch at the website and become a part of the solution. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next. Catch you next week, y'all.